specific problem statement, because I think people are struggling with the problem statements a little bit. And then I'll hopefully talk some time about the design document, just what's in it and formats and things like that. So the last half is not critical. You can pick that up offline. Okay, why don't we go ahead and get started? Though I know we're waiting on a few people, but you can put the computers down for the first half of class. I don't want those to be a distraction. So how's it going? We're now kind of into the enough of the course that you're getting used to the weekly grind. How's it going?
Can you reformat the PowerPoints? Because I can't open
the PPTXs, right?
Yeah, I can't.
So, you know, I can't, and I've been sending people who've contacted me, I've sent PDFs.
Can't you?
But
save it as 2003.
Yeah, but I don't want to do that.
Oh, sorry.
what year is this? 2010.
Yeah, and man.
No, what's expensive?
I don't know.
Don't start me on this argument. You can get 2007 as a student for like $60 or something.
I have 2007.
No, it should open under 2007. Well, I think, are you pulling them from your browser? Are you? So I've noticed that some computers are configured in such a way that when you click on them from a browser, the browser somehow isn't recognizing the file extension, but if you copy the file to your machine and you
save it
as a file, and it doesn't open under 2007?
I tried for like 10 minutes all the different ways I don't know.
Well, bring your laptop to my office and let's look at that when you get a chance, because this is just standard 2007. There's nothing special. But I will... I'd rather post them as PDFs than PPTs just because of the size, the duplication of space. But
just delete the action. Seriously?
Save it and delete the
action.
Really?
Sure.
In 2003?
If you,
no. But there's also these converters and that's really what I was trying to get people to install those converters, because you'll need those for other courses and other applications. And especially, at some point soon, we're going to jump up to, I guess, Office 2010 or something. So, you know, those of you still running 2003 really need to get upgraded. And if you're not familiar with how, you can buy these Office really inexpensively through the university, through the academic, Journey Ed or whoever it is. So, I think life as a student's great. You get a lot of software really inexpensively. So, any other issues so far? You feel like you're sinking? You feel like your head's above water still? You'll just take whatever lumps I give and hope you survive? Okay, well, you know, the point of all this, the point of the weekly assignments, I know it might not seem that way, but it's to be constructive, to help you make progress on the projects. So, you know, let's just hang in there.
Can
Okay, so what I wanted to do today, based on looking at the problem statements, you know, the reason I'm asking is I was hoping somebody would say, I don't understand what the heck you want in our problem statement. So I thought we should probably go through a problem statement and talk about it, and maybe that'll give you a better feel for what I'm asking for. I've also been talking with the tech writing instructor, Joe Donowski, about this a little bit. And then I'll spend some time talking about the actual design document, which you'll start using to deliver your assignments. So what I did for the problem statement is I went back quite a few years and picked up a problem statement from a project that I thought was an interesting project, and I thought it was a project you all could relate to, even though it's a little bit heavy on electronics. See, I have the same problem here, actually, that I have to save this. So this project was done in, I think, before 2000. And the goal of this project was to build a breathalyzer, a device that you could breathe into and it would read your alcohol, the alcohol content in your blood. And at the time this project was conceived, police were still using the big units that either sat in the car or they'd actually take you down to the station and do it all at the station. So the goal here was to build all this in a handheld device. So we want to build so the project is to build a handheld breathalyzer. Okay, everyone understand that. Everyone can relate to that, I think. So the question now is what should be in the problem statement for such a project? Okay, so let me first, let's just kind of go through what they wrote, and then we'll go back and sort of pick it apart piece by piece. So why don't you just go ahead and read this, and let me know when I need to scroll down, and give you a couple minutes to read that, and then we can talk about it. And why don't you put the computer screens down so we focus today on classroom interaction. Put the computer screens down. Okay, should I scroll? Okay, can I go to the next page? What? No? Your lap. You think because.
I'm only halfway.
Slow, halfway? Have you ever been to a speed reading class? You don't, I mean, you don't need to understand every word. I just want you to have a sense of what was written in the overall problem statement so we can discuss its content. Okay. This was an actual problem statement from the end of second semester.
It's not long enough.
Well, we'll get to that. Very good observation. Okay, we ready to discuss? Not yet. Okay. Are you? Okay. All right. So, do we want to be critical first or do we want to be positive first?
Tear it apart.
Tear it apart? All right. What's the first thing that's obviously wrong with this statement? The first thing that drops them from probably an A to a C almost instantly. And probably almost can get them in academic trouble as well. No references, right? So, if this were a court of law, they could be tried for what?
Plagiarism.
Why?
Because they have a whole bunch of data that...
They make a whole bunch of statements that they're claiming are their own. So, references are not... I think students sometimes think, oh, they're just crazy about this crazy stuff like references. But anytime you make a statement of fact that is not your own data, your unique data, you have to reference that or you're guilty of plagiarism. And if you don't think that's a problem, wait someday till you see somebody using your material without referencing it on the web and making money off of it. You'll get upset. So, references were one. Then the other one. Okay, so length. What was your requirement?
2 pages.
2 pages in what format?
11 point. 1 inch margins.
1 inch margins and single spaced, right? How many projects do you think actually met that constraint? Were you the ones who put the figure in at the bottom? So that was cute. That forced me to revise my requirements. It's not long enough. So I want to hear from you. Why is it so much trouble to come up with 2 pages of text describing this project that's going to be your primary focus for the next year of your life? You don't know enough about it yet.
Yeah.
That's very real. That's a very real issue. Do you think that's healthy at this point in the semester? That's a problem.
Well, I found that I try to just get to the point instead of elaborating as these people did here. You know,
okay, so this is a good, that's an excellent comment, because I used to be that way. I would write a point once in a document. And my documents would be very short. It's like, I don't need War and Peace. I can write War and Peace in like 5 sentences. Then I actually went to a writing workshop. I was dragged to a writing workshop. I didn't want to go to a writing workshop. My management dragged me to a writing workshop. We had to all go through it. And I met a writing instructor who impressed me because he lived on a boat, on a yacht in San Diego Harbor. So he was very successful at what he did. So I was looking at this guy thinking, well, he's living a pretty nice lifestyle. He must know something, and got to talking, and we actually talked at length about this topic, and he said the following. He said, remember, your goal is to communicate, right? What is the point of this document you're generating? It's to communicate your ideas to the reader. And if communication doesn't occur, you failed, right? If you don't communicate your concepts to me, you can get a bad grade, and you can sit down with me and say, well, you see, I said that here, but if I miss that, you're out of luck, right? Or if I don't understand what you're stating, you're out of luck. So most good technical documents, particularly when you're writing proposals, will actually mention the key points at least 3 times in the document. Now, as engineers, we think this is redundant. As English majors or communications majors, they will say, this is what it takes to reinforce the concepts in the reader's mind so that they retain those concepts when they complete reading the document. So, resist the temptation to be really terse, because you do need to take some time to explain things, if nothing else, because you're telling a story and you're really trying to get inside the reader's head. Now, that doesn't mean you have to go on and on and on for pages, because you'll also lose the reader. But I know as writers there's a tendency to say, well, I said everything I needed to say in 1 sentence. Why do I need 2 pages? But I think we really get into the issue you referred to more, which is many of you just haven't realized how complex your projects are yet. And I guarantee by the end of the second semester, you'll be able to write 2 pages of a problem statement. Because you'll know all the problems you've encountered, and you'll realize all the things you hadn't thought about. So, what, generally speaking, should be in a problem statement?
The issue that is causing this project.
The problem.
Yeah.
A concise statement of the problem seems to be a good thing to be in a problem statement, right? How many of you think when I read your problem statements, I could state, at the end of that, I could state the essence of your project in 1 sentence? There were some who did a pretty good job of that, actually.
That is more general or more to the statement. Like, for instance,
right,
turbines, or is the problem the environmental issue in general, or is it to make a better turbine?
Thank you, because you lead to my next point. Okay, so what is the goal of this problem statement? What is the goal of your abstract? What is the goal of your title? These three actually share a very similar goal, and that's why they're relatively short. That's why I want the problem statement to only be 2 pages long, because after 2 pages, you're going to lose me. Now, I know you're thinking 2 pages is a lot, but remember, your final design document is probably going to be about 50 pages. So that won't seem so long. But what are you generally trying to do when you go for, if you think of these three things, the title, the abstract, the problem statement, at the end of that problem statement, what must happen? Exactly. The funder or the buyer must have an emotional attachment to this problem. I must be convinced it's really important that you're working on this thing. Now, if you don't think that's true, you know, you're thinking, well, I'm going to be an engineer buried inside a company. But you're going to have the same problem with your manager. Your manager is going to look across the group and say, give me a list of things you want to work on next year. And they'll ask you to write 1 or 2 page proposals for those things. And the ones that are going to get selected are the proposals that can really grab the attention of your manager. And if you don't do that, you'll more than likely be working on someone else's project. So you've got to grab the attention of the reader. You've got to get emotional buy-in and all that stuff. Okay, so how do we do that? This now sort of gets to what you're asking. Well, the way not to do that is to start out by saying, I'm going to build a microprocessor 3471 and, you know, solder a few resistors together, right? I mean, that's way, way too technical. What does it take to get some emotional buy-in?
We need this type of technology in this world.
There has to be a problem that's worth solving, a problem that has some social or societal relevance, right? Now, if your goal at the end of this is to have my emotional buy-in, where are you going to introduce that high-level information? The beginning and the end, right? So I do like a couple things I like about this statement is the first paragraph is not too bad. It kind of frames a very broad problem. And if I remember right, you know, the last paragraph tries to also address the importance of this problem. So the first quarter page is where you can spend your time on the mom and apple pie kind of stuff about why this is really important. But if you only do that, then I'm left not really understanding what you're actually specifically doing in this project. So you have to then drill, people use this term, drill down into more of the details of what you're specifically doing. And we'll get to that a little bit. So, the first paragraph, people have known for many years that the consumption of alcohol can and will result in temporary mental and physical impairment if alcohol is consumed. What's good about that statement?
Direct.
It's. It seems important, right? And particularly as college-age students, you know that's important. You know that's true, right? What's wrong with that sentence?
References.
Why? Very good. Why?
There's no references.
It's a very bold statement. Here's this societal problem, and there's no reference. How do I know whether to believe this?
I'm not trying to be sarcastic, but I mean, in health class in high school, they pound this into your head.
Yes, but this is a good point. Thank you for being bold enough to ask that. Yes, I think many of us can relate to what it was to be drunk, though it's been a long time.
Has it?
Yes, it has, actually.
The Super Bowl was not that long ago.
No, I... But... That's a good point. I can relate to the fact that the physical impairment and stuff. But this sentence says something much more significant, and that's why it needs a reference. It says people have known for many years. That's a statement of fact that needs to be supported with evidence. because they're speaking about the world. They're not just speaking about themselves. If they said something like, you know, I was drunk last Saturday night and I got caught by the police, I mean, okay, maybe you don't need a reference for that. But they're saying people have known for many years. Maybe people haven't known for many years. I mean, this is perhaps not the most egregious example of this, but I think you get the idea. They're making a statement that has to be supported with scientific evidence.
And the impairment part is also very, like, I guess, medical, like the temporary impairment.
Yeah, I mean, you could actually get into some of the medical issues on that. And in fact, you could argue that this sentence needs several references for that reason. Now, you know, that's the kind of thing that a lot of your problem statements were lacking. If I, you know, generally, if I look at a problem statement and I don't see a reference in the first paragraph, that's pretty much a tip-off that there's going to be problems in this problem statement. Yeah.
But isn't, like, common knowledge stuff doesn't have to be referenced?
It depends somewhat on the forum that you're in. You're right. If you're writing in a scientific journal, and what you're talking about is so high level and so much common knowledge, you may not actually reference it. But for the purposes of senior design, I think you need to have these kinds of references. And we'll see more examples of that, serious examples of that. Like the logical connection was made that when the brain was exposed to a certain amount of alcohol, these physical impairments will result. So that definitely needs a reference. Because they're referring to some kind of scientific experiments that were run.
They're not being specific, though. They're not saying, like, what the impairments entail, how much alcohol needs to be consumed. So what would they quote?
Right, so that's a good point, too, that they could actually sharpen this a bit. They get a little more into some of the details here, but you're right. They could actually talk about blood alcohol levels in the first paragraph and kind of get beyond that point pretty quickly. They don't need to belabor that later in the document. So about the first half page should be, I'll allow you the first half of a page to do the high level, big picture kind of stuff, build me a good emotional argument, but not much more than that. So, and they do some of that here. They're still talking about, blood and this and that. They have a couple grammatical issues, perhaps. Now, what happens here? How does this now shift? What's the next thing that needs to be in your problem statement? So you've done the high level, the big picture stuff. A good thing to do next is what's out there. So another thing I like about this abstract is then they go into what's available. And they do a pretty decent job of sort of sorting the products into two categories, the really cheap ones for home use or for personal use, and the really expensive ones, which presumably are used for legal reasons and things like that. But they don't just leave it generally. What happens here? They're beginning to explain how it actually works. Now, you could say, oh, hold it, that sounds like approach. But why is this not considered approach?
It's still describing what's out there.
It's still describing what's out there. It's not describing what they're specifically going to do. It's telling me what the marketplace is like and what the technology available is like. Yeah, I'm not going to nitpick over kind of what you have in your first half page. Yeah, just, right.
Now what about this below, this third paragraph? We will attempt to design a small portable breath analyzer as an approach.
I think that's okay at this point because that's sort of telling me what specifically they're going to do. And at this point, they've motivated it with the general problem, the specific technology, and they're not really giving me too many details. They're just kind of framing it. Saying we're trying to, here's the marketplace, small and cheap, expensive and big. We're trying to fit into the small and cheap. And they talk a little bit about features that are going to relate to their specific project. So the next, you know, the next part of the page, I think, should basically kind of frame the marketplace and talk about what's available and what are sort of the pros and cons of those things that are available. So here they're getting a little bit technical, but generally they're trying to tell you sort of all these devices generally work a certain way. Now this at this point, how would you describe this kind of information?
It's explaining what's very specific.
Now they're getting very specific about what they're going to do. How appropriate is that at this point in this problem statement? Well, when they say something like an alphanumeric display will count down from 60 to 0, what am I thinking as your senior design instructor? And what will your boss and your company be thinking when they're trying to choose what projects they're going to invest in? Is what?
No, it's for the calibration.
Well, I'm just using this as an example. But in a more general sense, anytime you tell me you're going to do something in a problem statement, what am I going to think as sort of someone who's analyzing this problem statement?
Then you already designed it. You're not. There's no design. You've already made a decision about it.
And how have you made that decision? So who drives these kinds of constraints? The market, the customers, right? So what I want to hear in the problem statement is not so much what you want to do. I don't really care what you want to do until I know that this is what the customers want. So the next, I would say the next half a page, your paragraph, first paragraph on the second page, now really starts to kind of focus on, you've done this analysis of the marketplace, you know, there's a general societal need, there's a specific thing you're trying to build, this is what the customers want in that thing you're trying to build. And that shouldn't be your guesses or your approaches, that should be backed by information and data. Customer surveys were done, or, you know, the companies, you know, successful companies who own the marketplace do these things. That should come from facts, once again, facts that are referenced, because it's not your original work. And, you know, as we're getting into design constraints, I hope you're starting to see that design constraints are not driven by what you think would be really cool to build. They're driven by what the problem demands in the technology. So by the end of this next chunk, we're now almost done, I should have a very good idea of what the market need is for this thing you're trying to build and what the general requirements for that product are. In the case of this project, the breath analyzer, what are some of the general constraints that are really important to this project?
I think accuracy, but they never stated a percentage that they would. Did they say it's 100% accurate?
Yeah, that was a big. I fought a lot with this team over that issue, and they were trying to skate on that because they were afraid.
The ones that are out today, they are
So what do they report blood alcohol levels in? What kind of numbers? 0.1, 0.2, you usually hear like 0.8, 1.0, 0.08, do they go down that low? Maybe. I think, what's the legal limit? I thought 0.08. Okay, so 0.02, it's hundreds of percent. So 0.02 is like one drink, or 0.08 is a legal limit, and 0.1 is really bad. And I think 0.14, you're dead, or something like that.
0.3
is you're dead. Okay, so that gives you an idea of the range. If you're going to establish 0.08 as the legal limit, how accurate do you think you need to be on that?
0.001.
It would be nice to maybe be within 10%, right? So if it's really, you know, the difference between 0.07, 0.08, and 0.09, so your measurement ought to be accurate maybe to one or two thousandths of a place. And that was a problem with this project, so they were fighting that for a while because students are always afraid if they set a design constraint and they don't meet it that they're going to flunk the class, but that's not really the way it works. We try to mutually set design constraints to be realistic, and, you know, you do your best to meet them. But by the end of this chunk of this document, what are some of the things that are really, that as a reader I should have in my mind that are really essential about this? Accuracy is a good one, but what else? What's the essence of this project revolve around?
Size,
right? It's got to be small. So I ought to have as a reader some idea of what's feasible. You know, is it going to be really, really small? Is it going to be a keychain? Is it going to be a little box? Is it going to be a rack-mounted piece of equipment? Portable can mean many things to many people, right? These PCs used to be considered portable computers because the alternative in those days were much bigger computers. Some other things. We had accuracy. Very good. Excellent. Battery life, right? You get really upset if you had to replace the battery every year. And that with projects that use electronics, I'm going to really beat on you about batteries, because battery life is just amazing. It's just amazing to me how far battery life has been extended in most products. So there's battery life issues. There's some display issues, you know, how it's going to display, how readable it's going to be. An interesting thing about breathalyzers is that you tend to use these in places that are dimly lit. So you might want to think about having multiple, having a bright mode in the display, and, you know, these kinds of issues. What about transduction? How do you get your breath into this device? Okay, so don't you think that's a major design issue? It turns out it is, actually. They do some really interesting things with the little nozzles that you put your mouth around and blow into so that they get an accurate measurement. Those are actually fairly well engineered, though they might not seem it. It's not just like a cylindrical piece of pipe or something. They actually have some kind of, if I remember right, some kind of diaphragm or something in there. Okay, so that gets us to you're almost done. You've got one half of a page left. What are you going to try to do in that last one half of a page? No, not necessarily summarize. You will sort of summarize, but what are you going to try to accomplish in that last half of a page? No. What? Emotional, and what comes before emotions with most engineers? Money, right? What? What are you going to try to accomplish? You're going to want to convince me of what? You're right, cost. That it's profitable, right? So what, for example, as a venture capitalist, what am I going to be thinking about? Well, at this point, you sold me that this thing is important. You sold me that there's some very realistic constraints, which if you meet them, you know, you enable some kind of market. But now I want to hear about what's the market like. If you're only going to sell 10 of these, why am I going to invest in this?
If your market is not really a market.
Oh, you have a great market for your project.
Yeah, not a particularly well.
In fact, your project is one of these that's so interesting because if you're successful, you could be overwhelmed with demand. And that's actually that's a very good way to anger customers, is to promise something and then get like a million orders and not be able to deliver on them. Yeah, I mean, your project has a big potential market. Thank you for asking that. That's a very interesting question that I actually battled with at my former institution. And we used to actually make students sign intellectual property agreements. My understanding at Temple is Temple allows you to own these projects, and that's actually the way it is at most schools with student work these days. And yes, there will be people interested in the intellectual property for your projects if it's a good project. That's one of the reasons I like the websites, because it gets out there and you'll get people contacting you, asking you questions or showing interest. I've actually had companies approach students who want to mass produce their senior design projects. I kind of wonder about that because the projects they pick sometimes aren't the greatest, but there are intellectual property issues, and I'm thinking we'll talk a little bit about that in second semester. So in this last paragraph, I want you to convince me of the size of your market, the scale, you know, the potential for profitability of your product, the impact it's going to be, who's going to buy it. You know, all those kinds of issues. You also probably want to throw in a little bit of, we've talked about environmental issues, sustainability issues. There's also maintenance. You know, if this breathalyzer needs to be recalibrated every week, it's basically useless. Calibration is actually a big issue. If you've ever gotten a speeding ticket and tried to beat it in court, you know, they always go after calibration. When was the last time you calibrated your radar gun? Even though they don't really need to be calibrated all that much, they still use that as a out. So there's a lot, you know, there's still a lot of issues left that you can talk about, and that's why these problem statements can easily be more than 2 pages. But I'll settle for 2, you know, well-written pages, but, you know, I don't know what the word count is actually on this. It's probably...
1,120.
What?
1,120.
For the 2 pages? Oh, okay, so, but they're short. But they're short. So I was going to say, I'm thinking about 2,000 words is what... It's probably about 1,500. Yeah. So, you know, you're going to be looking at about 1,500 words.
How many do you want?
I want 2 pages. Now, there were a couple groups that gave me exactly 200 word abstracts. I was very impressed with that. But I want exact, you know, 2 pages. It can be more than 2 pages, but no less than 2 pages, according to the formats that are provided. So let's talk a little bit about that. So was this helpful in helping you expand your problem statements? It's actually a good process because it's helping you understand the act of going through to a lot of students, it seems like I teach senior design backwards. They always want to say, let me build the thing first, and then I can generate all the documentation for it. But that's not the way it works in the real world. In the real world, you have to propose, you have to understand, you have to design before you start building. So this process is hopefully helping you understand your projects better. I just... Is that a feature of Explorer that it remembers where you were last time? That's not bad.
Firefox has been doing it for a while.
When you click on the icon? Yeah, I think that's why it might have remembered. But anyway... All right, so let's talk about the design document. My goal in this class is to teach you to help you do formulaic, what I call formulaic writing, which means don't waste a lot of time figuring out, making this a creative writing exercise. Just sort of follow the guidelines. So this is what I want the title pages to look like, though a couple teams have already done really nice variants of this, and I'm fine with that. I was very impressed, actually. Just make sure that the important information is here. I want to see the title. I want to see who it's being submitted to. I want to see some nice graphics. And most importantly, I want to see the team, and I want to see the advisors. You and your advisors are in this together, so I want their names plastered all over these projects. That way they'll pay attention to you. And it wouldn't hurt to have a temple logo somewhere. And then also you can use my contact information. I used to actually have people put their contact information, but we live in this world where there's protection of personal information and all that now, so I list myself as contact just so that we have a way of connecting you to people who are interested, but normally if you were writing a proposal, you'd actually have emails and telephone numbers and things like that. Okay, any questions on the cover page? That's one of your assignments for next week, is you're going to turn in your design. So what you're going to be doing each week now is developing this document, adding to it, and submitting the whole document to me. So I think for next week we have I think it's the cover page plus the revised design constraint, plus the design constraint section. We'll talk next time about the executive summary. Executive summary is another exercise in formula writing. There's roughly about 4 paragraphs to this, and we'll go through what's in each one of the paragraphs and why that should be there. The executive summary is really important because most of the high-level decision makers, people who have lots of money and want to invest in your project, this is all they'll ever read. If you look at like a venture capitalist, every day they get hundreds of proposals. If you ever see one of their desks, sometimes they actually have like stacks and stacks of proposals on their desk. How do they sort through 100 proposals and decide which ones they want to actually read? They read the executive summary. Well, they probably look at the cover page, and if that doesn't get their attention, it's probably gone. But yeah, they'll read the executive summary at most and make a decision. You may have spent 6 months developing that proposal or that startup, that business plan or that startup package, and you may only get a couple minutes of their time, and they're just going to read the executive summary. So it's got to be one page. The table of contents we'll talk about later. So the first section is going to be, so some general things about the document. The 1-inch margins, the running headers. Do you know if there's issues in Word? There's a lot of little details that I'm using in Word here, which I know many of you are probably not familiar with. So I'll help you through those details. But this document has section breaks in it. If you're not familiar with those, you'll get a chance to learn how those work. It's got the running heads, which you can edit using the edit header function. The paragraphs are actually part of the styles. So whenever you're creating a paragraph, you should always go to the styles section and select one of these. And normal is your basic paragraph style. There's also styles for headings and equations and figures and all those things. So that's one of the ways you make your documents conform to the standards, is you use the paragraph styles, which have all this information encoded in them. A document is a lot like a computer program. It's actually got structure to it. It's not just customized, you know, you don't just start editing this thing in Word and changing things on the fly. Every paragraph should be tagged with a particular style. Every heading and all that kind of stuff programmed according to the headings, styles, and such. So if you use those styles, you'll get all this for free. Now, we are going to use cross-references for tables and figures. So if you're not familiar with how those work, we can talk about that later, but basically in Word, you'll do insert cross-reference. And I think if you look through this document, this reference for table is actually a cross-reference. Why is that a cross-reference? Why do we use cross-references instead of just typing table 1 there?
I guess if you had it electronically, you could click on it?
No. Suppose we're on the 32nd page and we're referencing table 6. And it's 2 semesters from now, you know, you're one or two weeks away from graduation, and someone has to go in and add a table to your design constraints section, which is in front of this, and they add a table.
Table 6 becomes table 7,
only you've forgotten all about that, right? You haven't looked at that section in months. But the numbers get updated automatically. So that cross-references is another thing which allows you to edit the document, and everything is updated automatically. It's a very important part of a structured document. And since everyone's going to be working on this document, you're also going to have the problem of merging multiple versions of the documents and things like that, and that's why cross-references are so useful. So I can show you some of that offline if you're not familiar with how that works. Similarly, with tables and figures, this is one thing I did want to point out today, which you may not be familiar with. When I insert a figure, what I actually use is a text box. I use a simple text box. I'll insert the figure into the text box, or I'll insert the table into the text box, and then I can move this text box around the text. And that allows me to do this kind of thing where text flows around the figure. I want your text flowing around figures. I don't want figures taking up enormous amounts of space. That's one of the ways you're going to try to make the page count, like the group that very nicely put a figure at the bottom of their problem statement. Yeah?
You could just insert the figure and then do like text swapping and the text wraps and stuff.
There's a couple different ways to do this. I don't really care which ones. I've found using text boxes works really nicely because you can control the text box really nicely. And over the years, Word has gotten better with figures and tables by themselves, but I think it's better to actually insert them in a text box. I think you have fewer problems down the line. Tables especially, tables like to do automatic things like wrap to the next page and all this stuff, and that's a little bit hard to deal with. Now, the one big change that was made this week is this. Who knows what APA formatted references are? What kinds of reference, what kinds of citations have you done in the past in your documents? Which are still, they're not numeric, right? When in the text.
I think they're.
So, a lot of engineering used to use numbers, but slowly it seems like that these APA and other styles are kind of taking over. We talked amongst the college and decided that we're going to standardize on APA format because that's what they're going to be teaching in the writing class. That's what you'll teach, you'll see in the seminar class, and that's what you'll see in senior design. So we're going to focus on APA this semester. This is what it looks like. The citation in the text looks that like that, which is actually a good thing because it's not a cross-reference. And then at the end of the document, your references will be listed alphabetically, like that. APA is a little bit, you know, all these formats are not terrible, but it has its little bit, its little intricacies. Here's two really good documents that have all sorts of information about what allowable form, what, how to do various things. The Wikipedia page is really nice because it shows you how to reference everything, including URLs, which is something I know a lot of you struggle with. And referencing of URLs is really important because URLs change, and that's a big problem in the web. When you're referencing URLs and someone reads your document 5 or 10 years from now, the URLs have probably all changed. And they don't know how, they have to have other ways to get at that information. By the time you're done with this document, you should have about 50 references. And at least half of those should be from peer-reviewed journals and books. You've got to get away from using URLs. In all the, most of the problem statements, I saw people pick up stuff off the web, reference it with the URL, when really that information came out of a what used to be called a print publication. Why is it important that your references come from peer-reviewed journals? What does that mean, peer-reviewed journals?
They're reviewed by peers.
And who are peers?
Professors, or, I mean, other people with doctorates.
People with similar intellectual standing, right?
Yeah, and that work in a similar field.
Why is that important? So if you're referencing something from, like, a legal journal, you're gonna it should be a journal that's reviewed by lawyers, by one of the major law societies or something. Why is the use of peer-reviewed journals so important versus URLs? What? It's credible. In what sense?
They have been, like, verified and correct.
It means that the article should be scientifically correct. Anybody can post a URL. There's no guarantee at that URL that any of that information is correct. That's a good and a bad thing. Peer-reviewed is not the greatest thing, but it's important when you're referencing statements of fact. You know, like some of the projects said things like wind energy use will grow 30% a year in the coming years. Don't give me a URL for that, you know, is Joe Bob's weather station site or something. Give me a government publication or a textbook or something that, you know, has some scientific credibility to it.
What if it's from the government website?
Okay, so that's a good case. If it's from a government website,
then don't trust it.
How should you reference it? Should you use the URL?
Yeah.
But so what you're really saying is, what if it's a government, like a government standard document, like EPA document.
It's published too, so you can find all the information as well.
And why is it exactly that? More than likely, that document has an official publication associated with it. There's one place in the world where you can be guaranteed that publication exists. The Library of Congress. Where is the Library of Congress? And actually, I don't know exactly where it is because they have lots of warehouses all over Washington. But somewhere in some warehouse in Washington, there's a copy of that document. And in return for that, you get an ISBN number. And hopefully that ISBN number will allow people to retrieve that document 1,000 years from now. URLs don't have that kind of longevity yet. So I'm going to hit you really hard on the references because this is part of the scientific process. And also resist the temptation of referencing things like Time Magazine versus scientific magazines like Nature or something. It's appropriate sometimes to reference pop magazines like Time or that, because if you're reporting on something that's in their domain of expertise, like a market analysis or a trend or something, but don't say something like something really technical, like energy turbines are 57% efficient on the average, wind turbines are 57% efficient, and reference Time Magazine for that. Time didn't come up with that. That measurement came from somewhere else. If you reference the wrong sources, you can also get in trouble. If you claim the wrong ownership of something, that's also a form of plagiarism. I have seen that in proposal writing. I've seen proposals get thrown out or really get beaten up because they didn't reference the right work. And sometimes the owner of that work has been on the review panel. And if you get really upset because they'll say in the review process, this proposal didn't reference my work. And you have similar things when you're going after projects and companies. If you know someone in the company came up with that idea and you're claiming it for your own or claiming it came from somewhere else, you're going to really anger that person and they're going to try to kill your project.
Is there anything that should be like, if I find something on Time Magazine that is referenced already there, but I don't have access to that article, you know what I'm saying?
Thank you. That's a very funny thing. In most research fields, that goes on all the time. Very few people have ever seen the actual original reference. They just reference it based on another paper that they read. And what's really funny about that is that in my field, for years, there were several publications done in the 1950s from a really obscure book. Nobody had the book, because I have a copy of the book. There's only like 5 copies of this book left. But everyone referenced it. And what was funny was when they referenced it, they incorrectly cited it, the same errors in the citation. And that was because everyone was copying a reference from one of the first papers that referenced that thing, and they just copied the reference and propagated it. And it was hilarious because for 15 years you could see that same reference, the wrong page numbers and the wrong date and things like that. So, yeah, you do this a lot. No, if you're reading a paper and someone says wind turbines are 57% efficient and they reference this publication by somebody, you, for example, you can lift that and use that in your document. Just if the reference isn't formatted properly, just go and research it. You can look online and find the actual, specific reference. It's not acceptable to say, well, I got that from someone else and I followed what they did. I don't care what they did. You're responsible for that standard. And then I also expect in the document as appendices, you'll have your technical, your product specification, and hopefully you'll have some other things like extended derivation. If you're doing some mathematics, and you want to kind of explain a relationship in great detail, but it's not really relevant to the main point of your paper, that goes in an appendix. So, let's say you're trying to explain, how coefficient of friction impacts wind or something, and there's some technical details to that, put it in an appendix. Don't clutter the main document with that kind of information. But it's good to have it because it tells me you understand with some technical depth what you're trying to do. Okay, so any questions on the design document itself? So take the template and actually use that. Don't try to recreate it. Just take that document and edit it. And as you encounter things in Word that you don't quite understand, give me a call, and we can sort of go through it, and hopefully in the process you'll become much better at using Word, which is an important skill these days. I mean, you have to be able to get your way around Word these days.
So what is due next week?
So next week, I thought I sent mail yesterday, but we can look on the syllabus. So next week is the, actually, no. What's today? Today's the 16th, right? So next week is the revised problem statement. What I'm asking for at this point is actually the design document. So take the actual template, add your problem statement to it, revise it, and submit now your, this will be your first official version of your design document. And also put your cover page on it. With the revised problem statement, though. So I'm going to grade the problem. This will be the last time I grade the problem statements. So I want, you know, try to make the corrections based on some of the information I gave you.
So is this grade the one that's going to count?
Well, all these grades count, but. But the most important grade is that at the end of the semester, you pass your design review.
So for the design document, you just want that first page edited and the problem statement.
I want your cover page and the problem statement. Don't worry about table of contents just yet. We can work through that and executive summary or any of that other stuff. This is just to get you into the design document.
Do you want to put the abstract?
The abstract should be on the main page or a link off the main page of your website. It doesn't go in here because we're going to have an executive summary in here. So the abstract was mainly for your web pages. Some of you have to clean up those websites a little bit. If you don't know how to do web stuff, again, ask somebody or come and ask me, but don't waste a lot of time trying to figure things out. Just find someone who knows how to do it and have them help you. That's perfectly acceptable. I'm not expecting y'all to turn into web designers or anything. Okay, any other issues? I'm hoping by the end of when you turn in your revised problem statement, you should have a pretty good idea of what you're doing on this project in a fair amount of detail. If you don't, you know, then we need to get with your advisor and have some more serious discussions, because we're now reaching a point of no return in the semester in terms of the definition of these projects. Now, the goal for the students taking seminar class this semester is that when they leave seminar class, they have a pretty good idea of what their project is all about. So you're the last class that'll be allowed to go this long. Okay. I will see you next Tuesday. What is happening tomorrow from 12 to 1 that you'll all be there because you want to score brownie points with your professor? What? It's the engineering week talk, right? He's actually going to be a very good speaker. So I really hope I'll see you all. If you do show up, wave to me or something so I, you know, remember that when I'm handing out final grades. You should talk to your professor if you really want to attend the
engineering class.
It's not engineering class? Yeah, that's a problem, unfortunately. That's been moved. The department one?
The 347, yeah. It was on room 347.
Yeah, that, I forget the student's name. It's Dr. Butz's student.
Yeah.
That's been moved. So there's no conflict.
Okay.